We're here at the American Seed Trade Association's annual meeting in Indianapolis this year. With me is Risa DeMasi from Oregon. And Risa, what's your title on the board?
I am the first vice chair as of this morning.
That's right. And the first woman. That's correct. Okay. Now, Risa, first of all, I wanted you to tell me a little bit about your company. I know we talked last year, so tell me a little bit about it now.
Our company's involved in research and development. So we develop varieties of cover crops, turf, forage varieties, and we're collaborating around the world with other partners.
And we talked about cover crops last year because this is kind of fairly new for ASTA to be getting into that area, right?
It's new, but it's not new. I mean, right. Cover crops have been around since the time of the pharaohs. And right. In fact, just earlier this year, I found a USDA bulletin, 1936, on conservation and cover crop use. So, yeah, it's what's old is new again.
But to develop specific varieties for cover crops, that's relatively new.
Yes and no. I mean, our company's been doing it since before it was cool. I mean, so we've been working on cover crops for over a decade. And, you know, if you look around the world, Europe's been way ahead of us, and it's based on restrictions and regulations that have happened over there. We can learn a lot from them, but there's a lot of exciting things going on here, too.
And that's a lot has to do with that buzzword, sustainability.
You know, I love that word, but if you were at the cover crop meeting, Dave Chance, who's a farmer here in Indiana, gave a presentation, and he introduced the word regenerative, and I like that so much better, because why would we sustain a depleted soil system?
So tell me what is new as far as cover crops and ASTA.
Well, we did just start this working group, and I think our whole focus is going to be on communication and collaboration. You know, at that meeting, we had a representative from SARE, a representative from NRCS, mm-hmm. From CTIC, and then we had a grower. So I think getting that entire stakeholder chain together to talk about things. I know there's a fear that there may not be enough seed produced to meet the demand, but I think it's a little premature. I think if we just get everybody together and start talking about what is the forecasting, what are the needs, what are we going to be doing for recommendations, how do we know we're bringing products that consumers can have confidence in? And, you know, if you miss any one of those pieces of the stakeholder chain, that wheel gets pretty wobbly. But together, I mean, we can move forward strongly and effectively and quickly. We're not reinventing the wheel.
So does the working group have specific goals that they're working toward?
That's what we're developing right now. And I think really we're going to start focusing first off with that communication and collaborating and making sure that, you know, we all know what each other is doing. Because I think a lot of us are all trying to do some of the same things or think that, oh, we need this. It doesn't exist. Well, I think a lot of those things exist. It's just a matter of putting the pieces together.
Okay, well, you're from Oregon. And we just had news out of Oregon just a few weeks ago. We have two counties bordering California that have decided that voted overwhelmingly. This was a huge vote to ban the production of genetically modified crops in their counties. What's your reaction to that? And what has been the reaction to people here at the Seed Trade Association about that?
Well, I think it's such an emotional conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think, as Americans, we're very privileged to have choices and freedoms to have those philosophical conversations. I don't think we always recognize the effects that we're having globally or just outside of our own areas. And, you know, as the presenter, the speaker this morning was talking about, those implications can mean life or death to somebody somewhere. And I think we need to keep that in perspective and keep our minds open and have thoughtful discussions and not try to keep it away from being so emotional.
Well, and it seems kind of unfair to tell a farmer what they can and cannot plant.
Yeah, and that's a good point. You know, there is the right to farm, you know, but where do you create those borders and when does it become theft and when does it become trespass? And how do we, again, it's just a thoughtful discussion. We just need to have those discussions rather than picking sides before we know all the facts.
Well, you said, I just heard you talking about the fact that you don't like using GMO or genetically modified organisms. Why is that? What do you prefer?
New technologies or advancements. You know, we focus on GMO and it becomes this big, bad, ugly monster thing. And, you know, when you look at nature, it's not static. Things change all the time. So, you know, even the conventional breeding that's going on, we're just speeding that process up. And I think, you know, genetically engineered, where you're taking some things out of you know, different species and putting them together. Some of the new technologies, like cisgenics, is species to species. Same process, but if you're just going to label GMO, GMO, and that's the box, well, then you can't even accept some things that technically you might, or emotionally you might be for. So, I, you know, nobody wants to get rid of their cell phone, but if we hadn't allowed that technology, I mean, where would we be today? I like running water. I like having an indoor bathroom. All those were new technologies at one point.
Well, it doesn't, you feel like it has a scary name? I mean, almost like a Frankenstein name, that connotation to the consumer?
Who hasn't seen the ads or the scary things online with the, you know, the stalk of corn with a syringe in it? But, you know, we think about some of the good things that have happened that nobody's talking about, you know, emotionally. The vitamins that were put in rice, you know, we aren't all the way there. But if we don't allow this to go forward, I mean, these are places in the world that mean, you know, it could mean life for millions of people. I don't want to make the decision that they can't have it. If it was your child and there was a pharmaceutical out there that could save that life, really?
Well, and drought-tolerant traits is another example of something that could be the difference between life or death, especially in third-world countries.
Absolutely, yeah. Drought tolerance, you know, erosion control. You know, you start getting into the cover crops and some of the benefits that come from some of those plants. It all works together. We can't segment things. I think we've compartmentalized things a little too much, and now we're coming back and starting to talk about how do all the pieces work together.
How big a challenge do you think the whole feeling about GMOs, or however you want to call biotechnology traits, among the consuming public, how big a challenge do you think that is for the industry?
I think it's huge. Obviously, we haven't gained much ground because we keep saying, well, the science, they'll come around to the science. Well, no, I think it really does become an emotional conversation, as much as we need to temper that down. But I think we need to change the conversation, and we need to share the stories, the human stories. I think those are the faces we need to put on the conversation, as opposed to just a data sheet somewhere.
Well, Risa, the meeting here in Indianapolis, we're well underway. How do you think it's going?
Oh, I think it's going great. I can't hardly figure out where I'm supposed to be when. There's too many things I want to listen to.
So it's been an exciting meeting so far, and a lot of energy?
Oh, tons of energy. And the rooms are full, and I think people are engaged, and that's what's exciting.
Okay, thank you so much. And here at the American Seed Trade Association annual meeting in Indianapolis, I'm Cindy Zimmerman.